You know, I've raised teenagers. They have trouble remembering where they put their homework. They'll play video games until 3 in the morning, the night before a test. They post recklessly inappropriate things on social media. Okay, to be fair, so does the president. But as neuroscientists keep warning us, the teenage brain is a work in progress. Could that perhaps be a good thing? Steve Paulson asked neuroscientist Frances Jensen to weigh in. She wrote the best-selling book, The Teenage Brain.
How exactly is the teenage brain different from the adult brain?
It's more different than we ever thought. The brain is the last organ in the body to develop, and it is not done until your mid to late 20s. Teenagers are therefore not adults with fewer miles on them, so there's actually more activity going on inside the teenage brain. The teenagers are able to form connections between their brain cells, which is how we learn. They can do that more rapidly than adults, not quite as rapidly as children. You know how children can learn 2 and 3 languages flawlessly?
Right.
Well, teenagers aren't quite that good, but they're much better than adults. They're really learning machines. We call that plasticity, that you can build your brain to your environment, if you will. So you expose a brain to one thing, and you're going to build a richer set of networks to deal with that thing than something else. So they're still in this golden period, but there is a paradoxical weakness of the teenage brain in that these brain regions that all have specializations, you've got a region for vision, for motor, for sexual function, for emotion, for executive function, all have to be connected to one another. And that process takes a lot longer because the brain is very complex. We have 100 billion brain cells approximately, and they're making 100 trillion connections. And these have to be actually insulated with a natural insulator called myelin that allows these signals to go rapidly from one side of the brain to the other or back and forth or inside brain networks. That process takes a really long time. The wrapping of all of these tracks takes a really long time. And that's the thing that's not over until the mid to late 20s. So their brain is still connecting.
What are the implications of that, that all this connectivity hasn't really set in until our mid-20s or so?
So the brain, interestingly, connects from the back to the front. Turns out the frontal lobe is important for executive function, empathy, impulsivity, judgment, organization, decision making, and impulse control, right? So we have that very well connected as adults. Teenagers have that frontal lobe. It's not like they don't have one. That takes until, again, the mid to late 20s. Hence, we see teenagers that do have risky behavior. There can be issues with empathy, judgment. This is kind of what typifies what we think in society when we think of a teenager. But there's neurobiology behind it. There's a reason they're like that. Nature's built them that way.
There might be some positive things about greater impulsivity, more willingness to take risks.
Yes. So teenagers are more prone to risk-taking and novelty-seeking. So that is part of brain development, to go and probe the environment, to be compelled to go and experience. But the downside is that some of those might be unsafe risks.
We hear a lot about the problems, especially the impulsivity, the risk-taking. And I'm wondering if there is really a positive spin to take on this. Have we only been focused on the problems?
Adolescents get a really bad rap, I think. Of course, there's some negatives, but there's also positives, and it's all coming from the same biology. So yes, that novelty seeking and the ability to learn really quickly means that if they want to try a new instrument or if they want to learn a new language, they're going to learn this much faster than an adult would. In fact, you can actually change your IQ still within your teen years, which is a new fact that came out of the science that's only been quite recent.
So make the case for why more risk-taking is actually something that we need. Why we need those teenagers to be out there sort of pushing the limits that we adults might have sort of kowtowed to.
They have a lot of energy. They have a lot of creativity. They have a lot of ability to learn things. But we are the adults around them. And I sometimes say we have our frontal lobes and they're connected. And sometimes we should give them a frontal lobe assist from time to time.
Which means what?
They may want to take a risk, but go just that bit too far.
Well, and I was going to follow up on this whole notion of risk-taking and why that's valuable and sort of looking at it in a different way. And I'm thinking about those student activists in Parkland. Mm-hmm. They have not been beaten down by the world or become as cynical about what is possible as so many adults are. And I think that's why so many of us have been so inspired by them, and that they have not gotten the message, for instance, that changing gun policy is hopeless.
Yes. One of the hallmark features of the developing brain is their resiliency. And it comes from this property of plasticity. Part of this is the resiliency that they're going to turn something terrible into something better, into action. It's also important for you to know that there are also areas of the brain that control emotion. Adolescents can, and there's studies that show this, have more strong emotional responses to stimuli than adults do. And we see this in day-to-day life with teenagers. One of the kind of negative things that are said about them, oh, they're just so emotional, they're going off the handle, they're frustrating me. Well, that's biology playing itself out. And you have to wonder whether some of that is part of what you've seen with these student activists, that they are feeling so compelled because they are having a very strong emotional reaction to what happened. It may be propelling them to be even more active than, say, an adult.
Yeah. You've had teenagers yourself, right?
I have.
Did you apply your knowledge as a scientist to your parenting? I mean, I'm wondering how that went over.
It really helped me become a more patient parent. It allowed me not to alienate them. I think we as parents and adults around our teenagers have to provide them with more explicit information because it's not necessarily going to occur to them in the split second. So I think we need to talk about likely risks that will occur in their environment in college or in high school because their brain is not going to be making those connections at the moment their peers are cajoling them into doing something illegal. That peer pressure is housed in this limbic center, which is very active, and they don't have their frontal lobe being able to say, you know, this may not be a good idea. I could actually get arrested or something like that.
So going back to your own kids when they were teenagers, I'm curious about how you put on your science hat, if you did. I mean, did you say, you know, your brains are still developing. Your frontal lobe isn't fully there. You need to take extra precautions. Did you try to say that?
I really did. I did. And then things would happen. Like one of my kids who was a super good student totaled his car by taking a left turn into an entrance actually to school in the early morning when he should have waited for the other car in the other lane to go by, which of course was driven by a 23-year-old guy. And of course they had a collision. And I looked at him like, why? And he's like, I know. But you know, but you can't, you know, these things happen on a weekly basis with teenagers. This is biology playing itself out.
So today's teenagers are almost the first generation that's been wired their whole lives. I wonder what kind of a difference that has made. I mean, are their brains actually wired differently than pre-internet generations of teenagers?
Well, there's research currently being done on that. There is research now to suggest that certainly early in life, because of course you have to follow these people for a number of years. And many of the studies that are starting to get published are really about children exposed to the internet and because they've been able to follow them out a little bit. But some of the research suggesting children that have been exposed to higher levels of screen time before the age of 2 or 18 months, actually they're having difficulty with interpreting social cues and vocabulary maybe.
And yet on the other hand, teenagers are so well networked.
That's right.
They're just constantly in touch with other people. They're on their social media platforms. I mean, there are tremendously positive elements to that as well. I mean, they can mobilize people really fast in a way that probably you and I can't.
Exactly. And again, going back to this movement in Florida, that's got to be part of how they've pulled themselves together. And that is something they're showing us how to do because adults are not really as good at that way of connecting at this point. There are many positives of what this social media, social connectivity, and barrage of information coming at them. They are, as I said, learning machines. The question is, what is too much? How much is not age appropriate? How much is going to cause stress versus be good for the brain? And it's all happening so fast. It's happening within like half a generation. Millennials have a very different experience than today's teenagers. And that's only like 6 years difference.
Right. Maybe the way we should really think about technology at their fingertips is that's an extension of the brain. In other words, maybe the question we should not be asking is it biology or is it culture? It's both. Mm-hmm. This is an extension of what they're wired to do in their own minds.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that I've asked millennial people this, and that's exactly what they say. They're like, well, why should I have to memorize that when I can just get it here? I can use my brain for something else. We remap our brain on a dynamic basis. This is happening throughout your brain as you're learning different skill sets. It's constantly sort of redistributing resources, if you will. The sky's the limit. It's going to be very exciting to see what we can achieve. We have to be able to think of it in terms of how we do our education in this window. I told you IQ can change in the teen years. So I think there's huge opportunities for the educational system, arts, athletics, to think about how do we use this period where the basic building of the brain happens in childhood. And then the adolescence is where we're building the more sophisticated, nuanced parts of your brain function. And there's a great deal of plasticity there.
That's Frances Jensen, chair of the neurology department at the University of Pennsylvania Medical School and author of The Teenage Brain. She was talking with Steve Paulson.